quite closed yet. All set? Good. The second case for oral argument this morning is Lita St. John Appellant versus Linda Peterson Appellee. For the appellant, we have Mr. Thomas Sanis, an attorney from Webster. And for the appellee, we have Mr. Reed Rasmussen, an attorney from Aberdeen. Mr. Sanis, you may proceed, sir, and you have 20 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, counsel, on behalf of Lita St. John, thank you for allowing me to appear today to convince this court to reverse and remand the trial court and order a new trial in this matter. And further, ask this court and order the trial court to allow Lita St. John to offer evidence of Dr. Peterson's experiences in repairing vesicovaginal fistulas in patients in Sisseton, Roberts County, South Dakota. A brief fact synopsis of this case is that in May of 2006, Lita St. John walked into the Catoda Prairie Hospital. This was a major day for Lita. She was going to have a hysterectomy done. Lita is a Native American. This had major issues for her. It took great thought. She was also leaving her 13-year-old son at home for muscular dystrophy. But as she walked into that hospital that day, she was hoping to find a cure for the stress incontinence that she had been suffering from and other female issues that had been causing her problems over the years. On that day, she placed her trust in Dr. Peterson to perform a hysterectomy and to bring her resolution as to the issues that she had been suffering from. Dr. Peterson performed the hysterectomy at Catoda Prairie Hospital. During that hysterectomy, there was damage that was caused to the bladder. This damage caused what was later determined to be a vesicovaginal fistula. A vesicovaginal fistula is a hole that forms between the bladder and the vagina, which allows urine to gush uncontrollably into the vagina and then, unfortunately, out of the body. It is truly a miserable experience. All individuals that testified at trial compared it to one of the worst things that a woman can go through. Unfortunately for Lita, the hysterectomy was a success. However, she began a two-year path of pure misery due to the vesicovaginal fistula. That is what brings us here today. Dr. Peterson attempted to repair that vesicovaginal fistula on four separate occasions. Lita St. John placed her trust and confidence in Dr. Peterson to repair that vesicovaginal fistula. A vesicovaginal fistula is a very rare event. All the individuals that testified at trial acknowledged this was not something that occurs on an everyday experience. While it is a recognized complication, it is very rare. In fact, Dr. Peterson's own expert testified that he had repaired 20 vesicovaginal fistulas. Dr. Peterson, in her repair attempts, used what is called a LASCO procedure. A LASCO procedure, if done correctly, is commonly accepted and the proper method for repairing a vesicovaginal fistula. But Dr. Peterson's method is not. Dr. Peterson used what is commonly referred to as the purse string suture method. Lita St. John's expert would testify at trial that this is not the accepted standard of care. Dr. Peterson's own expert would testify at trial that he has never repaired a vesicovaginal fistula in the manner that Dr. Peterson did it, nor has he taught that manner, nor does he know of any individual that teaches that manner.
Were you arguing at trial that she should have referred this to a specialist? Is that your claim, or that she simply didn't do the procedure correctly, but is a procedure within the skill of a general practitioner?
Mr. Chief Justice, I would agree that this should have been referred immediately to an expert, that Dr. Peterson did not possess the knowledge and the competency to properly repair a vesicovaginal fistula. In fact, Dr. Peterson, during her deposition, admitted that she had had four vesicovaginal fistulas occur in Sisseton, Roberts County, during an 18-month time frame, that she had attempted to repair these three of these vesicovaginal fistulas, I believe, and none of the repairs had worked. It is a position of Lita St. John that Dr. Peterson should never have attempted these repairs. She does not possess the knowledge, the skill, and the competency to properly repair a vesicovaginal fistula, and that goes directly to the manner in which she testified at trial. She testified as an expert at trial. As this court has aptly stated in Musol and Costell, a doctor or physician does not have to use the words standard of care in their testimony in order to be testifying as an expert. There are no magic words, magic language to invoke expert testimony. Dr. Peterson testified as a fact witness from her position. Unfortunately, she went above and beyond, and she testified as an expert witness in numerous situations. Lita never had an opportunity to cross-examine Dr. Peterson on her knowledge with repairing those vesicovaginal fistulas. And when she testified as an expert in Sisseton, South Dakota, before that jury, she elevated herself to a new level. She was able to clothe herself with a cloak of fiction that she knew what she was doing, that she was an expert, even though she was not. The record is full of specific examples, and I would refer the court to her direct testimony as to examples where she testified as an expert, and it's eerily similar to the testimony that was offered in the Musol case. Your Honor, I would specifically refer you to pages 157 forward of Dr. Peterson's testimony. She testified that she had over 30 years of experience. That in her 30 years, she had never seen anything like this. On page 158, she even stated to the court, "I have more expertise. I've been interested in urogynecology since I was 12 years old." She's not a urogynecologist. On page 159, she testified that this vesicovaginal fistula was bigger than one she'd ever seen in her training or ever since. That's important because as soon as she puts that out to the jury is left with the impression this doctor has repaired these. She knows what she is doing.
All right, Mr. Sands, weren't you able to cross-examine her on that if she was testifying? You were given the opportunity to cross-examine her, were you not? So why doesn't this become a fact issue for the jury?
Yes, Justice, I agree that we were given the opportunity to cross-examine her. However, Your Honor, in the pretrial ruling from the trial court specifically precluded Lita from offering any evidence as to Dr. Peterson's experience in repairing vesicovaginal fistulas.
All right, but once she testified, did you attempt to approach the bench and say, okay, she's opened the door now, and we should be able to cross-examine her on that? Did you make that attempt?
Your Honor, in that case, at that point in time, trial counsel did not approach the bench. However, I do not believe the matter has been waived. This case was actually tried twice. The first trial resulted in a mistrial. There has been the central issue in the entire case from day one was Dr. Peterson's repair of vesicovaginal fistulas. A motion in limine was made before the first trial to prohibit any evidence as to other lawsuits or other claims. During the first trial, that motion in limine was expanded by the trial court to prohibit any evidence offered on behalf of her ability to repair vesicovaginal fistulas. And in the first trial, after that issue was, the door was opened, there was a sidebar, there was an offer of proof made, and the trial court did not allow that type of examination. Therefore, after the mistrial and prior to the second trial, Lita brought a motion to clarify the court's prior ruling. The court was very specific and was very clear and stated that no evidence as to her ability to repair vesicovaginal fistulas would be offered to the jury. In fact, the motion was again raised on the day of trial and at each day beginning before the trials. The record was clear, and the trial court was not going to change its decision. I believe it was valid trial strategy Once Dr. Peterson started testifying as an expert, 17, 18, 20 pages of testimony to not continuously raise objections, which trial counsel knew would be overruled and would draw attention to that testimony, it would only further prejudice the case. The offer of proof was made by the trial counsel as to her experience in repairing vesicovaginal fistulas, and the trial court still did not allow that evidence to come forward.
Okay, what was the form of the evidence that you wanted to put in? Was that Dr. Wharton's deposition? Is that what you wanted to do? I can't figure out from the briefs exactly what it is that you intended to do.
Justice, we wish to cross-examine Dr. Peterson.
You did that.
But we were not allowed to explore the area of her ability to repair the vesicovaginal fistula. We were allowed to go into numerous other areas, but her experiences to repairing vesicovaginal fistulas in that small time frame in Sisseton, Roberts County, South Dakota, in other cases that she admitted in her deposition that she had had issues with, we were not allowed to explore that area.
Well, the trial court specifically allowed impeachment. The court said it would allow impeachment.
Your Honor, I do not believe the trial court allowed impeachment, though, as to repairing the vesicovaginal fistula. I believe the trial court would allow impeachment evidence as to other areas that she could be impeached, but not towards the repair of vesicovaginal fistulas. And the fact is, she had tried repairing them in Sisseton during this short period of time, and she had not successfully repaired them. If we would have had our option, we would have been able to present narrowly tailored questions on cross-examination that allowed us to prove she doesn't know how to repair a vesicovaginal fistula. She is not repairing them right, and she knows that she's not repairing them right. It's also important to note that she put out in her own records, Justice, that she had more expertise in this area. She was presenting it to other doctors and other medical establishments in the Indian Health Service that this was her area of expertise, that this was the area that she should handle, and my client should not go to Bell Court or other places. If she's telling that to other physicians and doctors when she does not possess that, that clearly opens the door to substantial cross-examination, and the trial court ruled that we could not cross-examine in regards to that area.
How do you prevent the problem with a trial within a trial? Because these other cases that you want to bring up, these other instances, were also pending malpractice cases, as I understand. So how do you prevent that? Because once you cross-examine it, then her expert's going to be coming in and saying, well, these were not instances, they're different, they're not malpractice. Pretty soon you've got a four-day trial turning into a 15, 20-day trial.
Yes, Your Honor, and I would agree that that is a legitimate concern. However, in this situation, the questions can be narrowly tailored. We're not here to request testimony as to knees, backs, spinal, I mean, anything other than the repair of a vesicovaginal fistula on approximately 3 to 4 women using a LASCO procedure in Sisseton in Roberts County. And it can be narrowly tailored with the questions to that specific area. The vesicovaginal fistula, from the doctor's testimony, while very rare, the testimony didn't take that very long to explain as how they were repaired. They compared it to placing a patch on a tire. And if you place it on their property properly and put air in, the patch will not blow off. If you do it improperly, such as Dr. Peterson did with this LASCO procedure, and the amount of tension that is placed on there, then it will never work. And I think that's...
Does the trial court abuse its discretion when it granted a severance on the other malpractice cases so only your case would be tried and then the others would be tried separately? Was that an abuse of discretion?
In Lita St. John's opinion, and I'm sure in the other plaintiffs' opinions, yes. However, we have not appealed that issue here to this court today.
I mean, that's a real dilemma for the trial court. If it's going to say we're going to let each case fall or stand on its own merits, and I'm going to sever each trial so that each plaintiff has to prove that case and no other case, then to allow each plaintiff then to bring in all the other cases anyway makes the point of having a severance. It makes it pointless to have severances, doesn't it?
Well, I would disagree with that because there are numerous other issues, Your Honor, that would come into the trial. Here, it can be limited to the repair of that vesicovaginal fistula. It is Dr. Peterson, one expert for each side. All three of these individuals, the trial court, the trial counsel, they were very familiar with the situation.
But weren't the other malpractice cases the same issue, the repair of the vesicovaginal fistula? On each of those other patients, there was the same issue, whether she had been negligent, had been violated the standard of care in repairing their vesicovaginal fistulas.
Yes, Your Honor.
Am I wrong? Okay.
That is correct. But the point is that she never properly repaired the vesicovaginal fistula. And she's allowed to come to testify before that jury, and she uses not the pronoun I, she uses the pronoun we. She testifies as a professor giving a class to the 12 layman jury. I mean, she is clearly testifying as an expert.
But is that what you're claiming as an error here, is that she was allowed to testify?
Justice, in my opinion, it's not error that she's allowed to testify, but it's error that she's allowed to testify as an expert, and we cannot cross-examine her on her expertise in repairing vesicovaginal fistulas.
Was there an objection to her testifying as an expert? I'm trying to narrow down what your claim here is. And what I'm having trouble with, going back to it, is, all right, if she testified, you cross-examined her, if you weren't able to get into the area, was there any kind of an offer of proof? I got conflicting statements from you, I thought, on whether or not there was an offer of proof on not being allowed to do this outside of the hearing of the jury.
Justice, if I understand the question right, yes, there was an offer of proof through our expert. There was not an offer of proof through testimony of Dr. Peterson. That was the manner in which it was presented. I think that goes back to a couple things. First of all, if Dr. Peterson would have come in and testified on behalf of any of the other doctors that testified in that case, and would have testified as to repairing vesicovaginal fistulas, her inability to repair any vesicovaginal fistulas would have been ripe for cross-examination, and the court would not have questioned it. But because she was allegedly testifying as a fact witness, she was allowed to get up there, present herself as an expert, and then we were prohibited from cross-examining her due to the court's finding that the sufficient relevancy was not outweighed by its prejudice. And we believe that the trial court erred in the language in its decision in the application of Rule 403. And it goes directly back to the point that Dr. Peterson does not know how to repair a vesicovaginal fistula. She doesn't have the competency. She does not have the ability to repair a vesicovaginal fistula. But that Roberts County jury, 12 laymen who have no experience in, thank God, most likely never heard of a vesicovaginal fistula, are left to judge whether or not she possesses that capability.
All right, your brief talked about the error in the manner in which the judge applied the test in 403. How did that affect you?
Your Honor, I think that goes right to the basic meat of the matter. The court was not going to allow any testimony as to Dr. Peterson's experience with repairing vesicovaginal fistulas with other individuals from day one. I mean, the trial court's decision was clear. It severed the trials. It granted trial courts, the defendant's motion during the first trial. During the first trial, when we believe the defendant clearly opened the door to this issue, a sidebar was had. The trial court denied Lita's chance and request to cross-examine. Later on, after that mistrial, the motion was again made before the court. The trial court was clear that it was impermissible for us to inquire into Dr. Peterson's ability to repair vesicovaginal fistulas. The motion was again made at the day of trial. Trial counsel did everything he could to ensure that it was properly brought before the court. During our motion for reconsideration, we specifically referred the trial court to Costell. Masseau is a companion case. We specifically stated that the evidence is relevant, and therefore if it's relevant, it's a lenient standard. It should be brought in. We specifically gave the right standard that the prejudicial value has to substantially outweigh its probative effect. and the trial court still ruled against Lita. There was no way that there was going to evidence was going to be entered in front of this jury as to Dr. Peterson's experience with repairing vesicovaginal fistulas, and she doesn't have the necessary competency to do so. And in order for it to be a fair trial, that's all we're asking. Give us a fair trial. They can cross-examine us on diabetes, smoking, and whether or not she made it to see other doctors. We have to be able to cross-examine Dr. Peterson as to whether or not she knows how to repair a vesicovaginal fistula and get directly into her experiences with repairing this. We'd respectfully request that this court reverse.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Sanis.
Thank you.
Mr. Rasmussen, you have 20 minutes, sir.
Thank you. Please, the court. Sanis. This is obviously an issue regarding the admissibility of evidence. Trial court can be reversed only if there's been a clear abuse of discretion, and there was not any such abuse of discretion.
Isn't there a problem, though? Didn't the judge use the wrong standard here?
You're talking about 403?
Right.
Well, first of all, I'll touch it. If the evidence isn't relevant, which is our position, then whether it's more prejudicial than probative, we don't even get to that point. But even if we assume there's some relevancy to this evidence, what they're doing is they're picking out one comment that Judge Flimmer made during the course of an argument and trying to fully rely on that to say that he doesn't understand the standard.
Did he write anything at any other time? Is there any other indication that he got it right at some other time?
Yes, I believe there is. First of all, even when he made that one comment, that was preceded by an argument by plaintiff's counsel, during which plaintiff's counsel twice stated, Judge, their burden is to prove that the evidence, the probative values substantially outweighs, or the prejudicial effect substantially outweighs the probative value. So the judge was aware of the standard. In addressing plaintiff's counsel at that point in time, the judge specifically started out his statement by saying, I granted the motion for severance because of my concerns about, I believe it was unfair prejudice is the word he used, which is a shorthand that we frequently see by courts.
That's really shorthand, though. I mean, he doesn't use substantially outweighed. I mean, he almost weighs the wrong one.
But I think
we don't know what he heard, but this is what he said. We know what he said. And if he is truly weighing it like he says he is, that's wrong.
In the first trial, the issue came up. And in discussing the issue in the first trial, he stated that he had granted the motion to sever because of his concern about unfair prejudice. And then went on to state, and this is on page 149 of the first trial transcript, it still appears to the court that prejudice is more probable than any probative value to the other cases. Now, he didn't use the term substantially outweigh, but he certainly said that the prejudice was more probable. It outweighed the probative value of the evidence. I think the court clearly understood that. But again, I think it's more, if we look at this evidence, its relevancy is really the key here. And this evidence simply is not relevant.
Was there evidence to show that these other allegations of malpractice were truly different issues? Because as I understand, we're talking about the same repair type technique, the Latsko technique. It's used each time. Was there evidence offered to show that these were really different issues and that would have complicated the case for the jury to have to resolve those at the same time?
They clearly were different issues, and there was evidence before the trial court, which was presented in connection with the motion to sever, where the operative reports from all four of these cases were presented to the trial court. And they show differing situations. In the St. John case, the operative report shows no bladder damage, and for 2 weeks after the surgery, she was seen once during that time period. While she was hospitalized, there's no evidence of leakage. She was seen in a post-op visit, no evidence of leakage. 2 weeks after the surgery, then there's evidence of a vesicovaginal fistula, which obviously developed as a result of the surgery. In the Cheryl Renville case, there was a reference in the operative report to what's called a rent. Dr. Peterson did not do anything to address the situation at that point in time. And it was later repaired by her. That's the case that was then settled with no admission of liability.
You know, what concerns me, you say it's not relevant, these other injuries. I mean, when would it become relevant? If you have a physician who is repeatedly injuring patients with the same procedure, and patient after patient is being injured, and so one goes to court, or they all sue, but one goes to court, and the judge says, well, I'm not going to let you bring in any of that other, any of all those, I don't care how many patients have been injured by this procedure, none of them are going to come in. Why? You know, at one point, does it become relevant that a physician is injuring patients repeatedly with the same wrong procedure?
Well, in the Schwartz cases, it came in situations where Dr. Schwartz had basically admitted negligence or signed a stipulation to that effect. In this case, we don't have
that. That's the only time?
Well, I think what we're looking at is in both the Schwartz cases, this court made a point of distinguishing between admissions and allegations. And in this case, clearly what we have are allegations. And again, these are Judge Plimmer made a specific finding in granting the motion to sever that these four cases involve different medical diagnoses and issues. That finding was never challenged. That they didn't, as Mr. Sanis indicated, they didn't appeal the decision to sever, and they didn't appeal Judge Plimmer's finding that these are different cases involving different things.
What about the use of those in cross-examination? Was the plaintiff prohibited from using those in cross-examination by Judge Flemmer's ruling?
Addressing these other three cases?
Yes.
Yes, the plaintiff was prohibited from doing that.
And was that a definitive ruling so that he didn't have to make an offer of proof at the time?
I don't know. I don't think so. No. I mean, that issue was raised previously about an offer of proof. Their only offer of proof was deposition testimony of their expert witness. They're talking about the fact that Dr. Peterson doesn't know how to repair a vesicovaginal fistula. Well, there is absolutely no evidence in the record. They didn't put Dr. Peterson's deposition into the record. It wasn't before the trial court, and it isn't before this court. But there's no evidence in this record that Dr. Peterson has never successfully repaired vesicovaginal fistulas. All they have three cases. There were four cases, and one of them she didn't even attempt to do a repair. So we have three cases where there were efforts to repair vesicovaginal fistulas. There's no evidence in this record that she's never successfully repaired one.
Okay, but they weren't allowed to address those with the doctor at all at any point by the judge's rulings.
That's correct. Based on the motion in limine, the judge ruled that they would not be allowed to go into these other cases. And by the same token, we presented absolutely no evidence about her success rate in repairing vesicovaginal fistulas.
But she does testify. I've read her testimony as well, and she certainly testifies that she knows what she's doing here, and that she's studied this particular procedure and believes that it's appropriate. She puts herself out there as an expert and gives an opinion, doesn't she?
Well, whether she puts herself out as an expert, I don't know about that, but she certainly does testify about her experience. But remember, and that's when we get to this invited error thing, the vast majority of the things they're complaining about were elicited on the adverse examination by the plaintiff's counsel. They're the ones that talked about her training experience. They're the ones that talked about this purse string suture with her, how she was trained to do that. They went after her on the fact that their expert contends that that's not a proper way to repair this thing. They're the ones that brought, she had a theory as to how this bladder injury had occurred, which was even different than our expert's theory. They're the ones that elicited all that testimony. And now they come in and say, well, she testified as an expert. They're the ones that brought all this stuff up. And the other thing to remember on this expert testimony issue is that prior to the first trial, they raised an issue that Dr. Peterson had not been designated as an expert witness by the defense, which was true. And they said, well, in light of that, she shouldn't be allowed to present any expert testimony. We argued about that a little bit. Eventually, I agreed. And the judge then ruled that she would not be presenting expert testimony. If they thought her testimony was inappropriate expert testimony at trial, they should have objected. There's not one objection. Obviously, they brought out a bunch of it on their adverse examination, but in my direct examination of her, there's not one objection to her testimony that is improper expert testimony. She was allowed to present that testimony completely without objection, but now they come back on appeal and say, well, because she testified as an expert, we should have been able to impeach her with the evidence of these other cases. That's just simply not appropriate. It's also very significant that the testimony in this case was to the effect, or not the testimony of the case, but the evidence in the record shows that Dr. Peterson testified in her deposition, which was related by the plaintiff's expert, that she'd had 8 vesico-vaginal fistulas in her history of 30 years of being an OBGYN. She testified that she has performed 1,500 to 2,000 hysterectomies. That comes out to be about a 0.5% rate of this complication occurring. The testimony of our expert, as well as the testimony in a medical research article that was put into evidence by the plaintiff, shows that the rate of complication for this procedure for vesico-vaginal fistulas occurring in connection with the hysterectomy is 0.5 to 2%.
Okay, but that was never the evidence of her rate of an unsuccessful procedure. That was never before the jury.
No, and the point is that she had experienced a recognized incidence of this event occurring. And so what is the relevancy of that evidence? The fact that she's had some vesico-vaginal fistulas in the past is totally irrelevant if she meets with the standard that you're going to have that percentage of this complication occurring.
But the issue today is not how many people have complications from the procedure, from the hysterectomy. The question is negligence in the repair.
Well, you're right. That's part of the issue. But they've also raised the issue of they wanted to put in this evidence. Part of their offer of proof is the evidence of how many vesico-vaginal fistulas she'd experienced. But you're right. The second issue then is, could she repair these things? And that, all we have, again, they've got these 3 cases where her repairs were unsuccessful. That doesn't tell this court, didn't tell the trial court, because they didn't present any further evidence. It didn't tell the trial court that she couldn't repair these things. In fact, she could. She was trained. She testified about it. And the whole issue was her use of what's called the purse string suture. Their expert got on that stand and said, nobody can use the purse string suture. And then he modified that a little bit. He says, well, you can use it if you have a very, very small fistula. But our expert, although testifying that that's not the way he was trained and that's not the way he teaches residents, he said it's a perfectly appropriate way in which to do it. And we presented an article from 2002, which they then put into evidence, which clearly says for a fistulas of 1.5 centimeters and smaller, a purse string suture is the appropriate way to do it. This was a 1 centimeter fistula. And so this whole purse string suture thing, the evidence was clear that it is an appropriate way to do it. And it's in the record. And, you know, their experts certainly can dispute that, although the testimony was that he had only repaired 1 vesico-vaginal fistula in his entire career. And so that was obviously evidence that the jury was aware of. This was all a matter of the two experts had their testimony. It was whether this was the manner in which she attempted to repair these fistulas was a breach of the standard of care, and clearly the evidence showed that it was an appropriate way to do it. And the evidence was also that if in repairing these things, if you do it in the early stages like she did, there's a 15% chance it's not going to work. And sometimes it doesn't work. And that's simply what we've got here. What we should not have had, and what Judge Flimmer correctly ruled, both granting a motion for severance and granting the motion to keep all this other stuff out, is to have multiple trials. These are 4 different cases, differing diagnoses. There were 2 of them were vaginal hysterectomies, 2 of them were abdominal hysterectomies, 4 different situations, 4 different cases. Although the plaintiff has the same expert for every case, we don't. So we're talking about, as Justice Konenkamp indicated, turning what actually was a 2-day trial into a 2 or 3 week trial, because we'd be trying all of these cases and going through all of these issues and these differing issues. The issue was the repair in the Lita St. John case inappropriate? It was not. I mean, it failed, but it was not negligence. And we're not looking at a situation like the Schwartz cases where there was admissions of malpractice in the past and a much more extensive history, or where we've got an actual stipulation signed by the doctor saying that, yes, I'm agreeing to put my license on probationary status because of malpractice. We don't have anything like that. These are allegations. That's all they are, mere allegations. And it'd be totally improper, and that's why obviously that's why the plaintiffs originally brought this as one case. They wanted to be able to try to tell the jury that she doesn't know what she's doing because she's been sued four times. That's not what we should be doing. If there's solid indication of that this person can't do a particular procedure and they keep doing it, that may be a different situation. But that's not what we have in this record at all. The offer of proof that we have is so limited. All that doctor says is, well, she had these other cases where there were vesicovaginal fistulas. Well, that doesn't tell us anything. If they really wanted to make a record on this, and they probably should have tried to do an offer of proof by examining Dr. Peterson. I don't think they would have got anywhere, knowing what I know, but they didn't make a sufficient record for this court to reverse this case and send it back for a retrial that's going to involve multiple experts and multiple days of trial and lead to confusion and misleading the jury. I wanted to also touch on, they did attempt to ask the court to use the procedure that was used in the Costco case where there was a clear history, they weren't allowed to fully go into all these other cases. They were just allowed to ask them three limited questions. And they wanted to use a procedure like that in this case. But the question they proposed was, totally, it would have made no sense. I mean, have you had problems with this procedure in the past? Well, presumably the procedure referring to a hysterectomy, I can't imagine there's any doctor that's done 1,500 to 2,000 of any procedure that wouldn't have to answer yes to that question. You're going to have an infection, you're going to have bleeding, you're going to have something. And so that the question they proposed would have been totally worthless. But even beyond that, even if they proposed a reasonable question, this case, again, is distinguishable from the Costell situation. In that case, we have just allegations, or in that case, there were admissions. In this case, we have allegations. Judge Flimmer wanted to avoid having four trials in one, and he appropriately granted our motion in that regard and restricted this testimony, and I believe rightfully so. And I believe that I would ask that the court to affirm the decision of the trial court and put this case at an end. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Rasmussen.
Justice Meyer-Henry, I appreciate the fact to be here in your last oral argument.
Okay. Mr. Sanis, you have 10 minutes, sir.
Thank you. Members of the court, this case is not about hysterectomies. It's about repairing vesicovaginal fistulas. And I would ask the court to refer to the order regarding plaintiff's motion to reconsider or clarify. This is the court's written record. It is hereby ordered that plaintiff's motion to reconsider is denied. That is what we discussed earlier during my oral arguments. The court goes further. In order to clarify the court's prior rulings, it is further ordered plaintiff is prohibited from offering any testimony or evidence concerning other lawsuits or claims brought against defendant and the facts involved in those other lawsuits and claims. I can understand the lawsuits and claims, but it's the facts. The court takes it one step further. It is further ordered plaintiff is prohibited from offering any testimony or evidence regarding defendant's treatments of other patients for vesicovaginal fistulas. The trial court was clear. We were not allowed to offer any evidence as to her ability to repair a vesicovaginal fistula.
Did you offer the court other instances than these three cases that were also pending? Or was that what you were referring to?
Yes, Your Honor. We were limited to just the cases that occurred in Sisson and Roberts County.
So those
would have been three other cases.
Okay.
technically two other cases were pending at that time, Chief Justice. But we didn't want to talk to her about things that happened in Watertown, Sioux Falls, somewhere else. We weren't talking about whether she had an infection with a hysterectomy. We wanted to talk about whether or not her version of a LATSCO procedure is a proper method to repair a vesicovaginal fistula, and if it is a proper method in the manner that she's doing it. Just because a LATSCO may be recognized, it doesn't mean that the way she does it is the right way to do it. A great example is I appear many times before the trial courts, and I may think this is the way the evidence should be, and the trial court corrects me. I can be wrong in my application, just as Dr. Peterson can be wrong in her application of the LATSCO procedure. We made a specific offer of proof. We reference it on page 20 of our appellant's brief. We specifically go through our expert reviewing the medical records at Coteau de Prairie Hospital. The vesicovaginal fistulas, that's what we're focused on. The hysterectomy is a red herring. I mean, the fact that she's causing a lot of vesicovaginal fistulas and that there's four of them and they're very rare, yes, that may raise an issue and bring up a whole other area, but what we were focused on was the repair of the vesicovaginal fistulas. Allow us to cross-examine the doctor as to her repair ability. And we specifically asked on our offer of proof about whether these cases had occurred in Sisseton, did she use the same procedure. Our doctor stated, yes, all the cases I reviewed were at the same hospital within a time frame of less than 18 months. And our question was, did it appear to you she had used her same technique of the purse string suture in trying to perform a repair of the other fistulas? Answer, yes, on all cases. Did you ever see a time when Dr. Peterson's technique of the bag of marbles or purse string suture worked? Answer, no. They all failed. And from a medical perspective, does that reflect in any way on her competency to perform a repair of a fistula? Absolutely, without a question. Our expert put the offer of proof in before the trial court. We spend a lot of time talking about how much time it might take to try the case. I am unaware of any case where this court has said it takes too long to try the case. We're looking for justice for Lita.
Well, whether it takes 2 days. You're absolutely right about that. I think you're absolutely right. And for me to say it would take 20 days isn't the question. I agree with you. But the real question is, does it create confusion for the jury? Because now they're going to have to hear 2 or 3 other malpractice actions at the same time. And isn't that the problem here?
I respectfully disagree as to the confusion. I believe it can be limited to just the repair of the vesicovaginal fistula. We don't have to go into how her vesicovaginal fistula was necessarily Cheryl Renville's was formed, or how Ruth Yakupov's vesicovaginal fistula was necessarily formed, but how it was repaired. And it can be narrowly tailored, because that is really the central issue. Whether or not she possesses the knowledge, the expertise, and the competence to repair vesicovaginal fistulas. And we respectfully submit that she does not. She hasn't repaired one in Roberts County. All of the cases that were reviewed by our expert showed that she did. And this is a very rare event. It is something that, I mean, there's a doctor in Minnesota from the University of Minneapolis, a very esteemed doctor who comes over and testifies, I've repaired 20 of them. Here, Dr. Peterson in Sisseton gets to come up before that jury of 12 laymen and describe how she ran the whole clinic for Indianapolis. That wasn't offered on our cross-examination or our direct. That was in direct response to her questioning. She offers percentages of success. That was as a direct result of direct questioning. She even goes so far when discussing what Dr. Benson, who eventually healed Lita, who repaired her, she even goes so far as to pontificate that she hadn't examined Lita in those 2 years, that last few months, that, oh, it would have been healthy skin, there would have been no infection, it would have been so easy to repair. I mean, she's clearly testifying as an expert, and we have to have an opportunity then to cross-examine the basis for that knowledge. I really believe it's important that if she would have testified for those other doctors, we would have been able to cross-examine. But because she testifies as the defendant, and we don't want to prejudice the jury, now all of a sudden we are limited in the testimony that we are able to offer. If they offered an expert or we offered an expert and maybe they had had two failures or three failures, it would have been legitimate cross-examination. I don't believe it would confuse the jury. And it may have extended the time frame for the trial. But it would still put all of the relevant facts before the jury so that the jury can find the truth. And we respectfully submit to this court that 24 people now that have sat on this case have never had the full story. They've never understood that Dr. Peterson does not possess the knowledge and the skill and the competency to repair a vesco-vaginal fistula using a lap scope procedure in the manner that she does it. That's the key thing. It's narrowly tailored. Dr. Peterson would like to open the door to... It's a cascade, it's a waterfall, it's too much. We respectfully disagree. We believe it can be narrowly tailored so that a jury can understand and make a proper determination as to the facts.
You know, you repeatedly talk about narrowly tailored, and that brings back the question we've asked you about before, and that is, if you're going to narrowly tailor something, you should have presented that to the trial court. You should have presented that narrowly tailored example of questioning so the trial court could see, well, maybe that doesn't violate the spirit of my rulings.
I would respectfully submit, Your Honor, that narrowly tailored questions were actually offered during the trial in the first offer of proof and during the second offer of proof. During the motion to reconsider, the court made us clear and abundantly clear. There was going to be no evidence, period. The question that was asked by counsel, probably a poorly worded question. I would agree that the question there could have been narrowly tailored. But even if the question was asked at that point in time, the trial court made its decision. And that's where it was stating that, hey, the probative value does not equal the prejudice. And by the trial court's ruling, we're never going to win if the prejudice equals 51%. Even if I get to 49% hypothetically, I can never win by the trial court's ruling at that point in time. And that's the position that Lita St. John was placed in. Every ruling from day one was clear. No evidence as to repairing vesco-vaginal fistulas. That's all she is asking this court to do. Allow her to have a second, actually a third chance, before a jury, offer testimony as to Dr. Peterson's capability, competence, knowledge as to repairing vesco-vaginal fistulas. It is clearly relevant. It is clearly probative. We believe it is much more probative than it is prejudicial. All evidence that is offered in trial, as this court and many other courts have recognized, is in some way, shape, or form prejudicial. That's why it is offered. I mean, clearly, Lita St. John wants to prevail, just as much as Dr. Peterson wants to prevail. But how she repairs these vesco-vaginal fistulas goes to the heart of whether or not that jury can make a competent and appropriate decision. In conclusion, we'd respectfully request that you reverse and remand and order the trial court to allow us to cross-examine Dr. Peterson. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sanis. Maybe a brief comment would be appropriate at this time. Supreme Courts are a composite of the jurists that make up that court. And if you have an 11-person court, maybe each personality doesn't affect the other 10 as much as when you only have 5. And even more so when not only are we professional colleagues, but also friends. And today we say goodbye to one of our dear friends and colleagues, Justice Meyer Henry. And thank you for everything you've done for us as a court, your opinions, the suggestions that you had that made our opinions better, your scholarship, and most of all, your friendship. Thank you for a job well done, and best wishes for the future.
Thank you.
With that, we are in recess.